Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hypothetical.
Okay, here's how Miro works. See, it's amazing.
What's everyone doing at David's desk?
Ever since marketing started using Miro's collaborative online whiteboard, he thinks all our other teams should sign up.
Why?
He says Miro's making his meetings disappear. And if every team gets on it, that means even less meetings. They're using Miro for brainstorms, mind maps, customer research.
So could we use Miro instead of having another 100 meetings for every round of feedback?
Yep. You can comment, react to ideas, even leave a recording on the board.
And what about presentations?
There are Miro templates for that.
How do you know so much about Miro?
I've actually been using it all along. I just used a Miro board to plan the best vacation.
Okay, I'm on board.
See how Miro users save up to 80 hours every year by meeting less and doing more. Get on board at Miro.com with 3 boards free forever. That's Miro.com.
Now through June 29th, you can earn up to 4x rewards points on your favorite products throughout the store at Safeway. Shop for items like Coca-Cola products, Deer Park Natural Spring Water, Dannon Light and Fit Yogurt, Mott's Original Applesauce, Heinz Ketchup, and McCormick Spices. And earn up to 4x bonus reward points to use for discounts on gas or groceries. Visit Safeway.com or download the Safeway 4U app to earn your reward points today. Offer valid through June 29th. See store for more details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this brand new spoiler review episode for episode 4 of Andor from the
Geek
Buddies
and Laura Kelly.
Hey! We're back at it again to have some fun talking about Andor here. Oh, boy, are things starting to heat up, and we'll see if Laura feels that way. But things are starting to heat up for sure. We've got a mission on deck, it seems like. We go to Coruscant. We got some stuff with Mon Mothma and Luthen Rael playing a very smiley, bejeweled man running an artifact shop. So much to talk about here in this review. We can't wait to get into it. Let's introduce ourselves. I'm the Outlaw John Roker, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies. Mike?
I am Michael Vogel. I'm a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
Shannon?
This is Shannon McClung. I'm an animation writer and a television actor, and I had some edamame right beforehand. There's something stuck in the back of my mouth. So I'm going to try not to be distracting, trying to get this little bit of a snap pea out of the back of my tooth.
It's a rebel inside the empire of your mouth. I get it. I totally understand what that would feel like. Laura Kelly is here as well, the co-host of Force Toast Pod and the co-host of The Jedi Way. How are you, Laura?
I'm doing amazing. I don't have edamame in my teeth. I hopefully don't have anything in my teeth, so I think I'm doing better than Shannon.
I mean, sure. Listen, on any day, you're doing better than Shannon.
Oh, it's Laura Kelly, man. It's Laura Kelly. That's no knock on you. It's Laura Kelly. Come on.
Sounds like a little bit of a knock. Sounds like a little bit of a knock.
Yeah, might be.
There's some fermenting going on, I think. We see Michael, shout out to your Grogu sitting on your shoulder. That's an awesome little guy hanging out with you.
He makes noises. Oh, yeah. You hear that?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's yeah. Cute.
That's very
Laura,
cute.
Are you jealous? You jealous? You want
kind
it?
Of, yeah.
But we also want to give a shout out to Carbon Health, who powers and sponsors us here on the Geek Buddies, carbonhealth.com. Go and visit them for all your healthcare questions, concerns, and needs. You know, we love to be sponsored by them. They love to uplift and support communities who talk about geek stuff just like we do. Get the app as well in case you have any questions on the run. That's carbonhealth.com. Go and visit them today. 80-plus locations in California, 100-plus locations all over the country. All right, the way we're going to break this thing down, we'll get general thoughts, quick general thoughts, then we'll jump into storylines here. Vogel, we always start with you. Overall thoughts on episode 4 here of Andor.
I mean, we in it now. We in it. I as we said last week, I was a really big fan of the first three episodes. I did say that I felt like I understood why they did all three of those. Like, it was a slow burn on those three. But I feel like with episode four, we're in it. It almost feels like those first three episodes were the prologue to get us all caught up and to put the pieces on the board. And this episode four to me feels like the show is really starting. We're really seeing what the shape of this is. You've got Cassian Andor at one end of the spectrum coming from like Ferrix? Which planet? What's the name of the planet?
Ferrix.
Coming from Ferrix and kind of, as we talked about last week, sort of seeing like that lower end of the economic scale of a galaxy far, far away. And now we're seeing Mon Mothma at the very top of the scale and just seeing like all the different places where the rebellion is starting. I am super in. The only critique I would have of this episode, and it's not even really a critique because I really enjoyed it all, but I do feel like as a hardcore Star Wars nerd, Mon Mothma on Coruscant kind of almost overshadowed Andor, Cassian Andor on Aldani for me. Like, I thought it was all interesting. Like, I have no, there's no issues with what happened on Aldani. I thought it was all interesting. I'm excited to see what happens. I really can't wait till we get to next week and we see how this goes down. But Mon Mothma on Coruscant got me, y'all. I was in it.
Fair enough. Laura Kelly, thoughts overall quickly on episode four here.
Now, I know I was, like, pretty subtle about my feelings in the first three episodes of the show.
That's the right word.
A little bit.
Yeah, it was, I wasn't a massive fan of the four that we have so far. This episode is my favorite.
Okay.
It was part of the screener package that we got early on, so I did have some light at the end of the tunnel. quite literally, I kind of like that the sort of color palette of this episode in particular is a little bit brighter. Being on live action Coruscant, being in Mon Mothma's quarters, which is all very like stark white with the gold trim, everything just looked a little bit different and brighter. It wasn't so drab and dreary, and I very much enjoyed that. It held my attention a lot more, despite the fact that I think the story is still moving a little bit slow for me. Overall, I was very excited to see Mon Mothma. I was very excited to dive into her part of the story, especially after I'm not saying I've written off how this show has gone so far. I'm trying to remain optimistic, but I was, needless to say, very relieved to just have something different to look at.
Fair enough. Sure. Shannon McClung, overall thoughts here on episode four. Did you like the clean look of Coruscant there compared to the more grungy, dirtier aspects of Aldani there with Bell and the crew and Andor?
I mean, I like the juxtaposition. I mean, I can't disagree with Laura that optics of the first three episodes, the aesthetic, yes, it was very grungy. I mean, it was very much on that lower end of the economic scale. Whereas this, like, I love getting to see how the other half lives in the Star Wars universe and the way that they would go back between being in these opulent suites to them literally sleeping on the ground. I mean, it really sort of illustrates that a rebellion has to take place on multiple fronts. That it can't just be one side. Like, it has to be a bunch of people working together. I loved finding out a little bit more about Karn, getting a little validation, be like, oh, okay, so yeah, I think John, you were the first one to call that about guessing what side of the tracks he came from. But yeah, I thought, I mean, it is a slow burn. Like, that is 100% correct. But I'm really enjoying it. I mean, and I love a good Imperial dress down, and we got a few in this episode.
Oh, yes, we did. Poor Deidre, man. But you respect that. And that's what I liked about this episode. It was full of some strong characters. Yes, we were getting Andor back, but Vel really announced herself as a leader of this team, getting more time with her. Some of you maybe remember her as the waif from Game of Thrones. She was fantastic during that whole season six, I think it was, where she was a part of this thing. And then getting to see the team and meet the team, I feel differently. I really enjoyed the stuff on Aldani. I liked that we were getting the base level understanding of what this is. The odds are against them. There's a garrison. They're switching up the plans. They're not telling everybody the full truth about everything. You're discovering on a need-to-know basis, and you're too deep to turn back. This feels very familiar to a military guy like me. So these kinds of things kind of connected with me more. But I did love seeing Coruscant. That is a beautiful planet. I'd love to live there. I'd love to have an apartment there, a house there. I'd hate to have a husband like this guy, but I certainly enjoyed all of that. and then getting some more with the, is it the ISB? I love getting
ISB.
Yeah, the ISB and seeing the internal politics. You know, for all the fact that you run the universe, there's still those petty little things that go on with people, no matter where you're, what office you're in. And I like that they brought it down to that, even though they're dealing with larger things. And even though Deidre might be 100% correct about what's happening here, for sure. So that's going to be fun to certainly explore as this season goes along.
Well, and also, John, she was not the only Game of Thrones alum in that scene. Major Partagaz, that's Qyburn from the later seasons. Right. So getting to see them in the same scene, that was a lot of fun.
I don't even know his name in the show, and I only refer to him as Qyburn, and I will probably refer to him as Qyburn throughout this review. And then Qyburn yelled at her.
Yeah,
it's Major Partagaz, but okay, if you want to say Qyburn.
Yeah, it's Qyburn.
Full disclosure, before I made that statement, I did go over to IMDb just to clarify what his name was.
And don't forget, Chief Hine has one scene in this as well, also a Game of Thrones alum in this. But let's start off. We'll start off with the Andor storyline. We start out with Luthen still trying to convince Andor to be part of this rebellion here. Andor mentions Alliance, Sep, Guerrilla, Partisan Front. Andor thinks they're all useless. So we do have this, that he doesn't want to be a part of this thing. Andor talks about fighting in Mimban at age 16, trying to kind of pawn off Luthen, saying, I've done my part for king and country, and we fought ourselves, and blah, blah. And he's like, you were a cook, and you were on the ground for 6 months, and you ran. That's why you live, son. So calling him out a little bit. And Luthen thinks he's going to die fighting these bastards. Why not start now? And eventually wears down Andor and tells him there's a mission for him. It's 5 days. If you survive and deliver, I'll pay you 200,000 credits, I think it was. And they are stealing the quarterly payroll for an entire Imperial site. I love this. Not something grandiose. Something really basic that could affect. It's not blowing stuff up. It's taking the payroll, which could cause dissent, cause issues. Smart. They land on Aldani. Luthen tells Andor to pick a name. He will be Clem, which some people have referenced is connected to something else. So very interesting. Then he gives Andor a Kawadi signet, Blue Kyber Skystone, celebrates the uprising against the Rakatan invaders. I had to go deep in to find out what the hell the Rakatan invaders were. That is way deep in Star Wars canon for sure. Luthen talks and argues with Vel, who shows up. We find out that she's the leader of the team. Faye Marseille is the actress here who is playing Vel. She's the head of the team. He is hired to pull this robbery off. Luthen says he is paying him. She gets mad because it's essentially a mercenary. He tells her that she has 3 days to make sure that this is working. If not, call it off. And if Andor is an issue, kill him. He's disposable. Vel and Andor walk and talk. And we hear more about the plan about robbing of the Aldani garrison. And they are taken on the Imperial Armory, which really shocks Andor. And of course, it's too late for him to pull back. And then we see these TIE fighters go by, which is really, I love that sound. Then Vel tells him about the 40,000 Aldanis across the Highlands and how the Empire drove them south to work in their factories and live in their houses, and talks about how Aldani is the perfect hub for distribution if you want to take over the galaxy. Then Andor meets the team. Skeen, we see waking up Nemec, who was sleeping on guard duty, and Skeen mentions Mossy, Garvish, and Saw Gerrera. We meet the rest of the team here, Terriman and Cinta, who are there, and the team is arguing with Vel. Nemec is feeling Andor's belief in the cause, though, which kind of quells a little bit of that argument here about bringing in a new person. Then later we see an Empire person on a speeder bike show up, and that is Lieutenant Gorn, who is part of this team. He is not happy with Vel. He meets Andor. We hear about an Imperial engineer that's arriving from Coruscant. We go through the drill. Nemec has built all of this and is very precious about it, and talks about the glue and the rain, and it's not to scale. So very, very much involved in the construction of the overall a garrison that they're using as a model. Andor thinks the plan won't work because the ship's going to be too slow. But then we hear about the Nazma Barani Temple, and that once every 3 years, the Aldanis gather for the Eye of Aldani, which is a celebration that looks like a meteor shower, but it's actually crystals in the sky slamming into themselves. And that's what they're going to use as cover when they take that quarterly payroll. And then Tarriman gives him the specs on the ship, the blueprint of the garrison, and Aldani phrase book. And Andor replies, can I finish my food now? And I'll be memorized this by morning. So, Mike, I go to you first here. That's basically the entire Andor storyline. Talk to me about how you felt they handled this in episode 4 and what you thought of it.
Well, I mean, I think I thought a lot as I was watching the episode about our review last week and kind of what Laura had said, and how Cassian Andor still is sort of a reluctant hero. Like he's making the decision here that he's going to do the job, and he's in for the job. And I imagine that by the time we get to the job and we see how good he is at what he does, we'll start to shift into a different phase of the show. But, you know, he's still not... actively driving the story. Everyone else is actively driving it for him. So in the opening scene, it's really Luthen kind of being like, look, you don't have a choice. Like, yeah. I can drop you off and you can keep doing what you're doing and you'll probably die. Or you could try and kill me, which probably isn't going to go great for you. Or you could take this job and do everything you want. And I do like this whole back and forth where Cassian is sort of saying, you don't know what I want. I don't believe in all this garbage. Alliance, guerrillas, partisans, it's all the same thing. Like, all of it is stupid. But, like, Luthen really sees Cassian better than Cassian sees Cassian. And yeah. I think that's why the show is still working, despite the fact that our main lead is kind of not into it. Because Luthen is really driving him forward, being like, look, basically, Luthen is going, you're the lead of the show, and you're going to embrace all this, and I know you're going to embrace all this, so let's just keep things moving. Which I think was really great.
You're number one on the call sheet here, guys.
You're number one on the call sheet. You're gonna get on here at some point.
You're not a side character. We're gonna find out all about you.
And I do. I mean, to your point, like, I didn't dislike anything in the Aldhani story. Like, I thought the way that Luthen sort of cajoled and bullied Vel into taking Cassian, Clem. Isn't Clem his dad's name?
Marva's partner. Yeah.
Marva and Clem, which is why I thought he chose the name. Yeah. But like the way that Luthen sort of cajoles her into it and kind of forces her to do it. And then the way she, like, once she accepts that, does the exact same thing to everybody else. And although there's a lot of griping and there's a lot of kind of vocal dissent, everybody does kind of get in line, kind of to your point, John, about seeing the ISB and seeing all of the red tape and everybody playing against each other. As much as everyone clearly did not like Cassian coming in here, everybody kind of got on board because you kind of have to. Like, there's this is how a rebellion is good. There's a bigger picture here, and we all believe in this thing. Whereas on the Imperial side, there is no bigger picture. Yeah. It's all very self-serving, which we'll get to when we get to the other story. Right. I thought that, again, I think I'm going to say this every week, so I apologize, but it's really nice not being on the volume. Like, watching those two walk through this mountainscape.
The Shire.
Watching them walk through it and having this conversation, a walk and talk like that on a smaller set, it just wouldn't have been as effective. It was so sweeping. And to your point, Johnny, when he heard those TIE fighters, seeing those TIE fighters fly through that valley,
dude,
it was just, it really, like, it took my breath away. And then I also just really love, what I love about the setup of all of this, what she said, their day-long trek to get to the Rebel base, and then even when you get to the Rebel base and everything they're talking about the getaway, is they're doing a really nice job of weaving into the story of how the Empire has treated the entire galaxy.
Right.
The way that they've displaced so many people, the way that they've moved so many people, these people that all have these very strong-held beliefs about the places they live and these sacred places that were super important to them that now they can't even get to anymore. And I just really love the subtle way that they're weaving that in. Really liked all the Rebel team. I know they're not all going to survive when this shit goes down. And I go to Shannon. That's a Back to the Future reference, right? When he was like, this thing isn't to scale. Like, when he was like,
that's what I thought. I got like, a I Doc like, Brown vibe.
He builds this very intricate thing to show them how they're going to do it. And he's clearly spent a lot of time on it. And he goes, I apologize, it's not to scale. And I was like, Doc Brown reference. So yeah, like, I thought everything was interesting, but I do still feel, and again, not a critique, because Diego Luna, I think Shannon said this last week, like, that dude opens his eyes, and those are some soulful eyes, and you can just, like, you believe everything he does, but everybody, the entire Rebel team, Luthen, everyone around him is so passionate and so clear on wanting to move this plan forward.
Yeah.
And he's still sort of reluctantly pulling back, which is where he's at in this part of the story. So I feel like once we see him shift, it's going to be really effective because he's holding back.
Yeah.
But you do just sort of still have that, like, come on, dude, I'm ready for you to go.
People are very passionate in one direction. When you switch them over to the other direction, they're just as passionate in that. So I think, and that's why there's a real kind of effort that has to happen, because it's going to take an entire effort, in his full body effort, full emotional effort, to go the other direction. So he's hesitant right now, but the fact that he's still willing to do it And the way he like kind of lingers on that Kyber crystal tells you that there's a world opening up for him that he's considering in all of this. And I think this team works really well together. Laura, what are your thoughts on this, on the whole storyline here with Andor in episode four, what we got?
Well, I like the very beginning of it where we're still on board the ship, actually, and it's kind of Luthen just giving him this, you know, talking down to, which I kind of appreciated that it's not just the Imperials that are sort of getting the dressing down. Like, it's also Cassian Andor, who is obviously a stubborn ass, is just kind of getting it handed to him by Luthen. And I kind of appreciate that. I like getting this insight and sort of digging more into this very new but very interesting dynamic between the two of them. Fun note, I think Cassian is wearing like a denim shirt in these early scenes, which I'm choosing to believe is an homage to Aunt Beru. Oh. And I will not hear anything different. I support it.
Okay.
But these scenes where he's talking to Luthen at the beginning, I mean, the scenes with this Kyber crystal, in addition to all of the, you know, legends, lore, and Easter eggs that are dropped in literally the one line, I think, that Luthen has in that first part of that scene. As soon as I watched that, and I didn't have a ton of faith that some of our new characters are going to live through this whole episode, but I mean, the fact that he's just like, yeah, I want that back at the end of this, I'm like, oh no, oh, he's not going to live to get that back, and it's going to be really sad. I can already see it coming. But like I said, the dynamic between the two of them is interesting. I like how he also told him, you know, you have the option here to like steal my ship. That's option number three here. But then at one point when you kind of see Cassian looking over at like whatever the little droid is that's built into the ship, and the droid's like, hi, can I help you, actually? It's just great because it's like, yeah, that ship was never going to allow Cassian.
That's a gay ship.
It.
That's a gay ship, by the way.
It's bringing the attitude.
Excuse me, can I help you? What are you staring at? Thank you, look away.
Oh, it's so good. You know, the rest of this team on Aldani, it's interesting. It's kind of funny that I feel like we kind of circle back to over and over again that they're all upset that he's there. Yeah. We get it. I think we're kind of repeating that two or three times. There's a couple of you know, these guerrilla people that they're talking about where they mentioned Saw Gerrera and Garvish on Mossy. And I'm like, are we supposed to know who those other two are? We know who Saw Gerrera is.
Yeah.
The other two, I wasn't sure about if those were new names. Mm-hmm. I like that Richie from The Bear is in this show.
I just
rewatched The Bear. So hearing him not speak with that over the top Chicago mixed with a New York accent, like, it's just, it was very interesting. And yeah, this poor young guy that is just our hopelessly naive young kid that's part of this team, another one I do not have high hopes for.
He's gonna die.
Yeah,
he's,
oh, it's gonna be sad. He's, if anybody's read the Alphabet Squadron novels, he's given a little bit of a Will Lark vibe, who I actually never finished those, so I don't know if Will lives or not, but I kind of am having doubts about this poor kid, so fingers crossed for him. But yeah, you're right, this whole, there's no way in hell this whole team is gonna survive.
Yeah, it's Rogue One thing all over again. You're absolutely right. Yeah, I think I feel that way too. Shannon, thoughts on how Andor was handled and his journey through this episode, and also how the team handles Andor and how Vel really kind of steps up to the plate and commands this team as well?
You know, both Diego Luna and Stellan Skarsgård are both just really, really dynamic performers.
Yeah.
But you do have times where you can have two incredible actors who just don't gel, and that is not the case here. I mean, they just play off each other really, really well, despite the fact that their characters are new to each other. They just have an ease with each other. And I think part of that is the performance. And part of that is Dan Gilroy's writing, who wrote this episode. And it's, I mean, across the board, all the dialogue, it is just written so, so well. And I think, not to say this is good, therefore this must be bad, it does kind of harken back to some of our earlier Disney Plus Star Wars shows, like, ah, man, you know, the Gilroy brothers are really doing a great job, whereas some of the writers that came before were like, yeah, we didn't think it was awesome when we saw it, but it was Star Wars, so we were so happy to get it. And they're like, oh yeah, that really was not awesome. but just watching those two together is really, really great. And you just see sort of the cut and dry quality of Luthen.
Yeah.
When he's like, here's what's going on. And even Cassian, when he's just like, look, I'll take the drop off. And he's like, yeah, okay, sure. But then as he convinces him, and you see with Cassian where he talks about those different rebellion groups. And this is like the rebellion started because there were a bunch of different groups of people that weren't happy.
Yeah.
And it takes them all coming together to work as a team to eventually topple the empire. And that's what's really cool to see right now is you can have sort of the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right.
And even though these groups might not get along, they might not know each other, they might not have the same sort of ideology, the fact that they all have a common enemy in the empire, and you get to see all these different alien races, these different types of people come together because they have sort of a, you know, unified cause. Thought it was awesome. The whole scene with Vel. So years ago when I was a child, went and saw the Blue Angels, who was, you know, the U.S. Navy sort of fighter jet demonstration team, like an air show team. And a couple of times they did a few low altitude runs above the audience. And the feeling that you get when a machine that powerful flies over you, I mean, it shakes you to your core.
Yeah.
And that's what I have to think. A TIE fighter flying that low in that valley, that's the same feeling I got. And like watching the episode again, often the like you can see the two TIE fighters kind of tiny way off in the distance right before Cassian goes, wait, do you hear that? Before they come screaming across. Like that's the type of thing. And to Vogel's point, like not using the volume for this, having these huge wide outdoor shots. I mean, it just, it makes the world so tangible. And it's, yeah, it's just really, really great. Getting to meet the team. I think where this show, because of, what is it? 12 episodes they're doing.
Yeah.
It's basically thinking of Obi-Wan because Obi-Wan was 6, I believe. They're something basically like that. Doubling that number. So all those characters that we met at the Inquisitorium Emporium who got wasted in one episode who we didn't really care about, that's what this show is doing right, is they're giving us time with people to get on their side, to understand their points of view. I mean, the little guy who again made the model, who was like, the rainwater gets in the glue, sorry. Like, Laura's right. Like, yeah, that guy's toast.
No, he's for sure toast. He's for sure going down.
But just getting to know everyone, it makes their stories, even their smaller side stories, so much more impactful. And then watching, you know, Eben Moss Backrack, who was from The Bear, who is a dynamite actor. I don't know the Chicago, New York accent well enough to say whether it's good. But as a performer, again, he's just one of those sort of magnetic guys that you just sit there and you want to watch. Watching the Imperial officer come in, being like, who the F is? Like, no. Like, you know, when you thinking about sort of military operations and how these insurgencies start. I mean, it takes one person to make the whole thing fall apart, and to see how Vel is really, really sticking her neck out for this to work. I mean, it's just very dynamic storytelling, and it's a blast to watch.
Yeah. And you know, she says, do I have a choice? And he goes, yeah, you have a choice. You can call it off or do it. That's your choice. So Vel agrees to do it. And even says, okay, fine, I'll do it. And you see her slowly but surely as she's walking in this conversation with Andor, you can almost see her in her mind mentally, like figuring out how she's going to address everybody, how she's going to bring this up, who's going to counter her first with what, who's going to be the most upset. And immediately she pawns off Terramen and I think Skeen to go look at the poles, or else they want to chase animals for the rest of the day. So she's, you know, she's smart in how she's doing all of this. And I think that's why you cast someone like her, because she kind of conveys that strength. And she's got a death stare like nobody else. Like, her angry stare is like unsettling. So it's a great choice in terms of acting. And you're right, all these characters are pretty clear. I mean, Skeen seems like her second in command. Terramen is the guy in charge of like all the particulars, like the blueprints and all the stuff that you might need. Senta is the medical person, and Nemec is the one who's like designing stuff. But also, Nemec might have some sort of mystical thing, because he says he senses Andor's commitment to the cause. What does that mean?
I don't think it's about that. I think he's a true believer. I think he's like he is just this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, I believe the best in everybody. And I think it's like I always use aliens as the old. I mean, I know we brought aliens up last week too because of the Gorman thing, but aliens to me is the ultimate example of having a massive cast of characters.
Yeah.
And in very, very like directed, targeted, specific, I have no time to do this and I only have like two lines ways getting you to know who each character is.
Yeah.
And I did feel like with this, they did do what I think we all sort of complained a little bit with the early Rebels in Obi-Wan. We wish we had seen a little bit more like that one or two lines. Oh, he made the model. Oh, he's the one who does all the schematics. Oh, she's the medic. Oh, he's the Imperial officer who's undercover. Like, you know, it's like we sort of just get just enough about each one. So in our brains, we sort of catalog them as separate people. And we're like, okay, I get who these people are. I get what this team is.
Right.
And to Shannon's point, it's just really, really good writing.
Absolutely. And it's good casting as well, because all of them 100%. Really embody these characters immediately. And so you're good to go as you move forward. Speaking of move forward, let's move on to the next section here.
You want
to
take a break?
Oh, yes. Sorry. God damn it. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back right after this. I'm trying to keep us on task. Sorry about that. Thanks for reminding me, Michael. All right, let's head off to the Imperial Security Bureau. Major Patagas is getting briefs from his officers about
Arvala's...
Qyburn?
It's Qyburn.
Qyburn. No, it's not Qyburn. It's Partagas.
We call him Qyburn. Getting briefs from his
officers about Arvala 6 and other areas and the incident on Ferrix in the Morlana sector. And then we meet Deidre, who tries to be teacher's pet by answering his question effectively by what's out of the book. And he said, no, that's wrong. Security is an illusion. They are healthcare providers locating germs from within or without before they become a disease that infects the Empire. We hear about what happened on Ferrix, and we see Deidre Miro get very interested in this, and we hear about the increase in construction shipments going to Scarif. A nice little reference there to Rogue One. Blevin, we cut to Blevin, who is on Ferrix later in the episode, and he is dressing down all the security people involved in Cyril Karn's latest escapade here, including Mosk and poor Chief Hine, who really just went for a vacation and then came back and all this shit went down. He dresses down Karn specifically and says, oh, you will not be replaced. Imperials are in charge of Morlana now. You are no longer necessary. Then we come back to Deidre, who's looking for her Starpath unit, with who I imagine is her assistant, and finds it. And we find out that it's from Stierguard Naval Yard. And now she has jurisdiction after her assistant is turned down by Blevin for that report on Ferrix. Deidre confronts Blevin, and he refuses the report a second time and calls her out on her ambitious nature. Then Deidre and Blevin later debate their issue for Daddy Radagas. She thinks this is part of an ongoing effort to steal proprietary Imperial equipment for a coordinated rebellion. She might be onto something. She sees similar items of interest and patterns developing here in multiple locations across the galaxy. But in the end, Radagas turns her down, sides with Blevin, sends Blevin off, and then he dresses her down a little bit and says there is a high bar for your performance. Whether it's fair or not, that's how it is. You're supposed to be more competent and tucked away. You have two sectors. He has six. His reports are in. I'm still waiting for yours. And he says he was impressed by her detention numbers on Sevtok. Deidre is and may have her do more of that down the road, and then leaves. Deidre is left seething, but also breathing a sigh of relief. So, Laura, thoughts on how this all went down? And this is actress Denise Goff, who's playing Deidre Miro. Thoughts on how how she was introduced here, and Blevin and the dressing down of Cyril Karn.
There's something very dynamic about her character, and I'm not really sure what it is, because I feel like I know I'm supposed to not like her, but there's just, she keeps her face so still and steady. It's really impressive. So I've been enjoying her character a lot. She's going to be one of the characters, I think, you know, we talked a lot about how Karn is supposed to be that villain you love to hate. I think that's going to be her for me, because I'm enjoying her very much. What I sort of love about some of these ISB scenes are we slip in the little bits of humor in these scenes. I mean, at one point, like Sergeant what's his nuts, like raises his hand during a point while they're getting lectured, and he's like, he raises his hand, and the ISB guy's just like, seriously? Like, these are little moments that legitimately got like a laugh out loud for me. In addition to the fact that we also get, you know, these two characters basically running to Qyburn, who is daddy, and they're like, I'm gonna go tattle on your ass to Qyburn. It's just a really fun dynamic because we know that the Empire likes to pit all of their agents against each other. There's always going to be that strive for competition in the Empire because they want to drive people to move up and to basically just be the worst versions of themselves in order to get what the Empire wants. So I enjoyed all of these Coruscant scenes just on the surface because we were on Coruscant and that was amazing. But the dynamic between all of these characters is just particularly interesting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Laura. I'm definitely finding her much more interesting and exciting. And listen, she won the 2016 Laurence Olivier Award for Best Actress over Nicole Kidman for a performance at the National Theater in a play called People, Places, and Things. So this is a woman with incredible pedigree. So when you talk about her look and her face and what she's doing within, this is an incredible actress bringing levels to her work here in quiet moments that radiate believability, and so that makes you connect with her a little bit more. Although Sarah Korn has a damn good look as well. I mean, let's be real, but I agree. I think she's the one that I'm going to be most interested in seeing. And clearly she's right. She's the one seeing the stuff the Empire is not seeing. So it'll be interesting to see how much that desire that mirrors kind of Cyril's desire to do something to make people aware that the alliance is forming or rebellion is forming here will come to play in the next few episodes. Shannon, your thoughts on how Deirdre Mero plays this whole thing out and how these storylines play out here in this section of these sections of the show.
I mean, just from the beginning, when we get to see from space, you know, the picture of Coruscant, you know, the capital of the galaxy. And, you know, it's a location that we've been to, you know, in animation and in live action, but the way that they shot it was just different. I mean, it was that, you know, sort of bird's eye view over the city, like the type of shot that you would see in like a crime drama, like that directly above the city. They're doing such a great job at making this feel like a real world. Everything just seems, it just seems very, very tactile. Walking into that briefing scene, the thing that I love about the sort of stark white walls with everything just perfect, it's that illusion of perfection, because clearly, like, they are in the driver's seat, like they're winning, they've won, but at the same time there's the fomenting, there's these pockets of resistance, and to watch them all try to keep their composure as they're being dressed down, talking about very real issues, it's just a lot of fun. And Deirdre is, from moment one, I mean, she's just a character. She's just a cool, cool character. I mean, she reminds me a little bit of Krennic. Maybe it's because of the white wardrobe, but it just seems like that stiff upper lip. Yeah. And when she gets the idea to start, you know, doing a little bit of research, just the way she goes into that data pad. I mean, she's just, it's something that can't be taught to performers. It's just a quality that certain people have. And the fact that she won apparently a very prestigious award over a huge movie star. I mean, clearly this is a performer who knows what they're doing. Everything in with Blevins, with the corporation security guys. I mean, again, the poor old guy. The guy from the Veil. He was just like, I didn't do anything. It's like, well, you are an ineffectual leader if you're the people who answer to you didn't listen to you. And the moment that you can, I mean, I feel like Karn is perpetually being shipped away throughout this series. Mm. Like when he's just like, you're not being replaced. Your position is gone.
Yeah.
Like now the Imperial forces are taking over everything. So good job. And the Deirdre Blevins scene I thought was great, and another really, really great line of dialogue when Blevins sort of cautions her ambitions, where he says, you might want to steady the ladder before trying to climb it. I was like, that is a great piece of writing. Based off of the trailers, I mean, I'm really, really excited to see where Deirdre goes.
Yeah, and he also says, when you fall here, you fall alone. So yeah, stuff like that, which is what Laura was alluding to, them being pitted against each other. That's the game. So if Blevins got six districts, he's clearly been playing the game very, very well for a bit. Mike, thoughts on Deidre Mira, this introduction of Denise Goff into this role here? And to be fair, she's won 2 Laurence Olivier Awards, so this is a very accomplished actress.
Wow.
Please, Michael, take it away. What do you?
Well, to Shannon's point, Coruscant is real. In a way, like Coruscant is like that was
like Santa Claus.
Like Santa Claus. Like when we first saw Coruscant, when you first saw Coruscant, for most of us, like in the prequel trilogy, you saw it at the very end of the remastered Return of the Jedi. But when you saw it in the prequel trilogy and CG was pretty new, and sure, it looked amazing and it looked beautiful, but you look back on it now and it's very CG. It's awesome. And you can see all of Coruscant, and especially in Attack of the Clones with the entire car chase scene, like you really get the different layers and the levels. And then Clone Wars really deepened Coruscant. Like we got to spend a lot more time there. But to Shannon's point, this makes Coruscant real in a nuts and bolts, gritty, rust and water running down the side of the building way that like we've just never seen before, which I think is really, really great and just needs to be called out. We talked a lot at the beginning about how between Cassian Andor and Mon Mothma, we're seeing these two extremes. But I really like how we also, in everything that we're seeing with the ISB, with Deidre, with the entire setup of Qyburn and everybody else, you're also seeing the difference between the Empire and the Rebellion. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not an accident that Aldani is a very nature-driven planet and they are sleeping in the woods. And the ISB is this white, clinical, no nature anywhere kind of thing. I mean, the reason that George Lucas made Coruscant Coruscant as the seat of where Palpatine was is because there was no nature. Like, the Empire is all technology, all hard edges and angles and cold lines. And the Rebellion is nature and warmth, and it's messy sometimes, but it works. And so that's what you're seeing here. Like, no one's happy that Cassian is there. They're all pissed off about it, but they all come together and it works. And in the ISB, no one is there for each other. It is all hard angles and it's cold and it's edges. And that's very apparent in the set design and in the performances and in the structure that you're setting up. I also think they do something really interesting with Deidre, and it's a really good hat trick. She's a bad guy.
Yes.
She's the Empire. But they have set her up as someone that we're still rooting for, even though we know she's the bad guy. So she is the underdog. She is struggling to like get her voice heard. She made a move, was slapped down by a bigger, worse asshole, was told that she has a lot to live up to. So in the way that they've set up her character, the way that they've written her, they have given us a bad guy that we know is bad, but that we still want to succeed. And that's a really, really great trick. Like, that's really, really good writing, because we're not looking at her going, oh, she's the bad guy, I want her to die. Like, they have set up a situation where she is right, everyone else is wrong.
Yeah.
She is on the right path. She has a lot to prove. There are other Imperial bad guys that are above her, like Blevin, that are assholes that we will enjoy seeing her get the better of. So even though ultimately we're going to want Cassian to win, we're going to want the Rebellion to win against her, like, we will root for her up till that point. And that makes a really, really engaging villain. So I think they did a really, really good job with that.
Yeah, for people who haven't seen Under the Banner of Heaven, she is fantastic in that series as well, as one of the wives of Sam Worthington. She is Sam Worthington's wife in that series, and she's incredible. And she's Irish, so her ability to do these like British or American accents, it's phenomenal to see this woman's talent. So shout out to her for sure. And I'm looking.
And also, really quick, just because it's awesome, because if you're a nerd, obviously, like you said, they bring up Scarif.
Yes.
And they're saying that a lot of money and a lot of supplies are being headed to being sent to Scarif.
Yeah.
And it's because they're building the Death Star. So like that's cool. But they also mention that there's a lot of prisoners being sent to prison because of Ryloth, which is the Twi'lek planet where Hera Syndulla and her family are. So a lot of things going on there. So like they're definitely doing a really nice job of doing Easter eggs in the right way, which is kind of throwing these things in and throwing these words in that if you are not a complete Star Wars nerd, it's like, okay, like, yeah, this feels like they're talking about planets. But if you are a Star Wars nerd, everything they're saying is actually correct and makes sense. And you're like, oh, yeah, that would make sense. There would be a lot of going on in Ryloth right now. That's really cool. So I appreciated that.
They also mentioned Arvala 6, Mike, which is in the same section of planets that Arvala 7 is, where in the desert planet where Din Djarin met Grogu. So there's that reference as well in here. And I think they mentioned Mimban, which is a bog planet, which people might remember.
Cassian Andor mentions Mimban.
He says,
back in the Luthen thing when they, I'm glad you brought that up because, Cassian says he fought on Mimban, which is a bog-like muddy planet and also happens to be the exact same planet that Han Solo is fighting on in Solo. And given the timelines, there's a pretty good chance those two might have been fighting at the same time-ish.
Yep.
Like...
And this is the setting for the Splinter of the Mind's Eye, Alan Dean Foster's paperback novel, which was kind of a sequel to A New Hope. And I met him at Comic-Con 4 years ago and got him to sign my copy of it. So that was pretty cool. But Mimban.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's really, you know, like, because when Han Solo goes there in the beginning of Solo and he's fighting for the Empire and they're fighting in this big battle and it's muddy and it's gross and he ultimately, like, saves Chewbacca and deserts. And then Cassian Andor also apparently was fighting in this muddy bog of a planet and points out that the Empire got a lot of mileage about getting a lot of people to fight against each other and not against the Empire. And he also deserted. So, little bond between Cassian and Solo there. They're both, they both got the fuck out.
They're both scoundrels. All right, let's move on to a little bit more of Coruscant and let's focus on Mon Mothma here. We see Luthen.
Would you like to go on a break first?
Oh, yeah. God, yes. I apologize. Let's go on a break real quick. There we go. Nice music. All right. Let's move on here. Let's go on to the next thing here.
Let's go on a break. Break.
For those who are watching us possibly for the first time, we do those breaks for the podcast stream we have on iHeartRadio, so it's easier for me to lay in commercials or ads so that you all are not annoyed by listening to us on the podcast stream. All right, let's move on to a little more of Coruscant, Mon Mothma, and Luthen. Is there anything else, or can we move on? I just want to make sure.
I'm sorry. I'm enjoying it. I'm having a good time. Guys, we have fun. That's what we do.
We do. We see Luthen put on a fake wig, new jewelry, practice a smile, which is really nice. So clearly he is another person. I think this is Luther Rand. Is that correct? Someone correct me. I think that's going to be his name. I think. I'm not sure. But we also see Cyril arriving home, greeted by his mother and then slapped by her. And then she hugs him. And for those of you who saw The Tragedy of Macbeth, that actress is the Three Witches in The Tragedy of Macbeth with Denzel Washington. That is the same actress. And nothing screams incel like having to go back to your mom's house after you lost your job. We meet Clea as Mon Mothma's ship is landing here, Luthen's partner. She mentions that she has a new driver, Mon Mothma does. Then Mon Mothma comes in and, my God, Genevieve O'Reilly is just absolute grace, elegance, and gorgeousness all at once. She commands any room she walks into, and you can see when she walks into Luthen's place there. She's a senator. We find out from Chandrila. I hope I'm saying that right. And, of course, Luthen puts on this act in showing her all these props and – I'm sorry, all these artifacts and stuff and says to her, oh, yes, you're here for your husband, his day of days. Is that correct? Let's get something for him. And meanwhile, Clea distracts the driver. They go into the back and have a conversation and a secret meeting under the guise of buying something for her husband. We hear about this idea of Mon Mothma moving money and that it's a lot harder for her to move this money in order to fund these rebellion excursions. And Luthen tries to call her out a little bit for being like, hey, I can only forage for so long. My people got to eat. And then she says that I think I found someone who might be able to help. Now, this is a nice bit of hypocrisy here. Because Luthen, who forced Vel to accept Andor into a situation, is rejecting Mon Mothma trying to get Luthen to accept a new person into their situation. So I like this little bit of pairing that goes on with that. They speak in code over the artifacts as well. And then they walk back out. And Luthen has Clea wrap up the artifact there. And there's Easter eggs galore all over the room, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point in this analysis. Then Mon Mothma arrives home, and it's a gorgeous home. You mentioned there's no nature. There's a little bit of nature in the home with a plant or a tree there. She sees her husband setting up a dinner, and immediately we know this guy is a bit of a fop. He's setting up this dinner for the governor of Hanna, Ars Dangor Sly Moore, from the vizier's private chamber. She does not want to have dinner with these senators. She didn't remember it was happening. She remembers him wearing her down and having Perrin wear her down. Perrin is the name of the husband, to make her agree with this dinner. And she's mad because those people try to undo everything she does in the Senate. Perrin responds in a dickish manner that maybe they'll think twice about it tomorrow. And he also says, but we can cancel it if you want, if it's no big deal. And she's like, no, fine, let's just do this thing. Don't sit me near them. And he says, oh, don't worry, you're in the boring end of the table. I just want to have fun. This is clearly a man who feels very inadequate next to a powerful woman and is jealous of her standing. And as she walks away, Perrin says, I heard you got me something. And she says, don't worry, it's going back. And he responds as a fop would by saying, oh, must everything be boring and sad? So what a weird world. But I love that we've got this thing for her. So Shannon, I go to you first. Thoughts on Mon Mothma here. Thoughts on the storyline here with her.
Well, starting with Karn, seeing that his family home, or at least where his mom lives, it's next to the 101 freeway.
Yeah, I mean,
under an overpass.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, she's down with the Martez sisters. Like, she is not in the nice part of Coruscant.
That's true.
I mean, you see those speeders, wah, 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 going by. I love that she comes out, smacks him in the face, and the nosy neighbor's kind of looking out like, mind your own business.
Yeah.
And when the door shuts, like, it does have sort of that stark white aesthetic that some of Coruscant does, but it's a little worn down. It's a little dirty. So those are just great production details that give you an idea of, like, at one point, maybe this was a nice place, but then they built that freeway and suddenly everything, you know, has kind of gone to shit next to it. So I thought that was really, really fun. The whole thing with Luthen getting to see this alter ego that he has, like, kind of taking his time, like, you know, using that steam cloth on his face, putting the wig on, putting the bracelets on. He's got to practice it a little bit because this is not who he is. The guy, the real Luthen, that's the guy who went and got Cassian. This other guy, this guy who he had been for a long time, this is now, it's the Batman Bruce Wayne thing. Like, this is the Bruce Wayne to the other guy's Batman. So watching him kind of in the mirror sort of adopt this persona, super fascinating. And we don't know a ton about Clea yet, but again, they just have a very, very nice chemistry between the two of them. And this whole charade that is being done, it's essentially for Mon Mothma's driver, which I'm like, that is like, this is the level of secrecy that they have to employ to make this, you know, to make their mission successful. I mean,
yeah, because they say
just fascinating.
It's a new driver, Shannon, and she talks about how there's new spies everywhere. She doesn't know who to trust. The noose is tightening on her. Yeah, absolutely.
As Clea basically distracts the driver, like, hey, come look at this. You see that quick look over to the side to Luth and be like, all right, take her back. And the moment that they get, you know, kind of behind closed doors, his voice completely changes, his posture changes. I was like, oh, that is fantastic acting, fantastic directing. I mean, it's just a joy to watch. And you get a sense of the stakes that are happening right now. And it was really funny because I had the same thought, John, is that he forced Cassian on Vel, but Mon Mothma tried to do the same thing. It's like, well, no, we can't do that. It's too late, because he, at the end of the day, the person he trusts is the guy in the mirror.
Yeah.
That is the only person he fully trusts. And then watching Mon Mothma get to her apartment. Perrin, I mean, he's a fop. Like, he's like, oh, well, that's the boring side. Like, he's the type of person that if it's not in front of his face, and unless it directly affects him, why do I care? Like, it is such a fascinating character trait to have. And even with Mon Mothma, like, obviously she's worked up about this. She's not happy about this. But when they're, you know, housekeeper, handmaiden, whatever that woman, and she comes, not now. Like, you see, she also has a little bit of that elite's ferocity that it's like, oh, okay, you know, you are trying to do the right thing. You also might bite the head off of your servant if they catch you in the wrong moment. Again, this is just such, it's just such the juxtaposition between the two worlds. I think that's why the show feels like it's really picking up, is you're getting outside of Cassian's world. You're getting a kind of a grander picture of what the whole story is going to be. And thus far, it's awesome.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Mike, thoughts on Genevieve O'Reilly, on Mon Mothma, on the progression here, Cyril Karn, and then of course Luthen doing his thing.
I mean, poor Cyril. I mean, everything. I think Shannon covered
poor
it.
Poor Cyril.
I mean, poor Cyril going to be. I mean, sure, he's gonna be an incel, but poor guy. Oh, what a, he had a rough couple days. This poor guy goes home to mom next to the 101. I think Shannon nailed it. I mean, this guy, like, it'll be really interesting to see where they take him. I mean, you know, you say incel, but like, he's at a crossroads right now. Like, does what happened to the Empire drive him to become I need to prove myself even harder so that the Empire will take me? Or does what happened with the Empire drive him to say, maybe this isn't right, and does he become a rebel?
Don't like, make you me care about him. I don't want to care about him.
You know, you say incel, but like, to the Empire, everyone on Aldani are incels. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see where Cyril goes from here. And I think that his path is wide open, which I think is really, really interesting. As far as Luthen, I would like everybody to do what I did, which is play that scene where he is on the ship and puts on his things, but mute your TV and just play the opening song to the Golden Girls. And he puts on his little wig. He puts on his purple flowy gown. He puts on his rings and his bracelets. And if you threw a party. And then he takes a little post, invited everyone you knew. Like, it really works. He basically becomes B. Arthur, and it's amazing. His transformation to B. Arthur is fantastic.
I have a feeling the ship might have been playing that song, as you said. The ship.
By the way, I feel like it did. But no, Shannon is right. It is an amazing acting feat to watch him put on that character. And also, when we all watched these trailers and we saw him in his sort of Coruscant look, we're like, oh, is he a senator? Is he a this? No, he runs a fucking art gallery. Like, he is nobody. Like, it's so fascinating. Genevieve O'Reilly, to me, is MVP. I mean, I think she is just owning this Mon Mothma. She goes into that gallery. Shannon's right. Like, Clea, all the little subtle glances. Yeah. The fact that they're doing all of this just for the driver because it is that secretive. Really quickly, I'm just going to go down the list because there was so much. The Utapauan monk cudgel. Utapau is where Obi-Wan Kenobi fought General Grievous in Revenge of the Sith. You can see a Twi'lek Kalachori in the background, which is a very important familial artifact to the Twi'lek people. let's see, what else? In the background, this gets really weird. I didn't know all this. I looked this up. Some people on Twitter were hitting me up with some stuff. It looks like there is a Jedi and a Sith holocron on the shelves in the background when they go back there. And it also looks like Indiana Jones' whip might be frozen in carbonite, and there's also some Shankara stones in the background. Yep. So this is a very Kathleen Kennedy shops at Luthen's Gallery. Let's just say that. The scene was really interesting. I love the interplay between Mon Mothma and Luthen. I just thought it was really, really... like, I'm in it. Like, I'm into this whole, like, how the nuts and bolts of the rebellion. Like, I want to listen to finance meetings about the rebellion and how they're spreading money around. Like, I just think the whole thing is really fascinating. Who Mon Mothma found is really interesting, and I really can't wait to see where that piece goes. This person that she found that she think will be valuable. Because at first I was like, okay, well, it's Jimmy Smith, it's Bail Organa. But as somebody else pointed out on Twitter, they were like, well, if that deleted scene from Revenge of the Sith is accurate, like, Bail Organa was kind of in from the beginning. Like, I don't think he's a new person to bring in. Maybe he might be a new person to bring in to Luthen. So that might be a thing. Some people are saying Ahsoka Tano because she's Fulcrum in Rebels. I really don't think that's the case. So I really do think who this either character that we already know or brand new character that she's going to kind of bring into the fold is going to be a really interesting piece of the puzzle. John, to your point, when she does go back home,
yeah,
this is really good production design.
Yeah,
the rebellion is nature. It always has been from the original trilogy. The Empire is always technology and hard lines. So Mon Mothma's home is in the Empire, but there's some nature because she's the rebellion. That's really good production design. I disagree with you about her husband. I don't think he is intimidated by a strong woman.
Okay.
I think he is someone who absolutely doesn't give a shit about anybody by himself, and he's perfect to live in Coruscant during the age of the Empire.
Okay.
He says she's boring because she cares about stuff.
Right.
She's already, even though she's not openly rebelling against the Empire, in the Senate, she's arguing to protect people who are being, you know, hurt by what the Empire is doing.
Yeah,
she's
trying to
help people.
Right, the Gorman shipping routes. Yeah.
And he doesn't care about that. So he thinks she's boring. The last thing he says in the scene is, like, why is it so bad that we just have fun? Like, he just wants to have a good time and enjoy their rich, fancy-ass lives on Coruscant. And as much as she is part of that rich elite, she's fighting for the little people. And I think that dynamic between them is really, really interesting. So, yeah, as far as all that goes, I can't wait to see more of her journey and really see more of that side of the rebellion. And I really, really can't wait for her and Cassian to meet for the first time. Like, seeing these two ends of the spectrum come together from just totally opposite ends of the galaxy, I think is going to be really, really satisfying.
I think the person who she might be talking about is Ben Miles, the actor from the British sitcom Coupling. He was in the trailer, and we see her talking to him, and that might be him. I'm not, I don't know. That might be him. He is not in the cast list for the next episode, but he was in the trailer. So I don't know if he's the guy she's talking about, but that's my suspicions at this point. But
I have a suspicion that I think you're right, that I think that it will probably be someone that is not, oh, it's Ahsoka Tano. Like, I think it's going to be much more of a, here's someone she brings in. And to Luthen's point, even though he does do the same thing with Cassian, she might bring in somebody who turns out to be dirty. Like, she might be making a mistake here. That might be a thing that's happening too. So it's going to be really interesting to find out.
Yeah, and I want to find out more about this relationship between them, right, Laura? I mean, like, what is this a marriage of convenience? Was this did she marry him to get out of a situation, or did they meet when they were younger and he's turned into this thing? Like, what is this all about? And does she stay married to him because of her connections to the Empire and needing to do what she needs to do in her position to help fund the rebels? Like, this is going to be fascinating as this relationship goes along. So how did you think they introduced Mon Mothma, how they introduced her, Luthen, all of this stuff here, and, of course, the Cyril Karn situation as well? Thoughts on all of this in this sections of the show?
You know, you bring up their marriage, and the thing that I think sort of stuck out to me at that point was that there's a line from House of Dragon, I think one of the most recent episodes, where, you know, Rhaenyra is talking about how marriage is basically a political maneuver. And when I watched this episode, I sort of wondered that about Mon Mothma and Perrin, because I'm like, what exactly is the relationship here? This is kind of hard to read. It's really interesting to watch. Yeah. Perrin sucks. I think he fucking sucks.
Yeah.
And I think he's the guy that says that we should all stop using pronouns because he doesn't get it. And he claims to be liberal, but he says he's fiscally conservative. And he definitely has voted for a third party candidate. It's like, this guy just sucks. So I'm not about him.
Or if he even voted. If he even voted. Yeah.
If he voted. Yeah, right. I, if we don't see him again, I'd be fine with it. But also, their relationship is interesting, so bring it on. I don't know. I echo everything that you guys said about Luthen and Mon Mothma's very fake, very enthusiastic, very overly polite conversation. Very fun to watch. I very much enjoyed that. I got to hit on one thing, though, during this conversation, because he goes to show her this Utapauan sword. And like a basic white girl who just returned from Spain and insists on telling you all about her trip to Barcelona, he pronounces the word aficionado as aficionado, it just threw me for a loop, and it was really funny and really fun to watch.
I love how Laura's coming for this show.
I know.
Laura's just coming for this show.
I gotta pick on these things because it was just funny. It was just, I don't know why he pronounced it like that. There's also a weird moment where Qyburn pronounces the word lieutenant like leftenant a couple of times. That's I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
I was very confused by that too. Mm-hmm. We're doing all kinds of weird pronunciations in this show for me. I'm not here for it. I imagine in this scene where we get all these great Easter eggs, which I very much enjoyed. I know that there's, I think there's like some of the stone tablets that kind of look like the hands from the gods of Mortis that we see in Star Wars Rebels and in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
You can see little pieces of those in the background. And I just imagine like in this script, like Tony Gilroy wrote in like the margin, like just put whatever random nerdy shit you want in this room. I do not.
But then they ran. Oh, for sure. When you get to, Tony Gilroy is not going like, and then we see some holocrons in the background and we see a Twilight Calicori. And like he doesn't do that. Like he's like,
he doesn't sound like Kermit the Frog.
Hi-oh, it's me, Tony Gilroy. Oh, yay. No, but it's like, it's all of the prop crew. It's all everybody. Like it's the design team. That's like, oh, we have to fill this gallery with Star Wars artifacts. What would make sense?
Yeah.
And they go to fucking town, yep, nerding out as much as any of us do. And props to them because those props are awesome.
Literal props.
Literal props.
No, I mean, like Tony Gilroy has like famously come out and said like that he did not grow up a Star Wars fan. This is really not his cup of tea, but he's managed to be very successful in this franchise. Yeah. And I, you know, it's because we've got those nerdy people behind the scenes that are willing to be like, what if we put this in here? Like it works.
Yeah.
The one last thing I wanted to hit on, I wanted to bring up the fact that, you know, she brings up this mystery person. We don't know who she's talking about. Yeah. I've seen a lot of people suspecting that maybe she's talking about Bail or Ahsoka. Neither one of those make any sense in the context of the Ahsoka novel, which takes place very shortly after Revenge of the Sith. Mm. Bail Organa is already in it with the rebellion at that point, and Ahsoka is like joining basically up with the rebellion at that point too. So they're already in it. They're already doing their own thing. I don't think that's who we're bringing in. I like your theory, John, that we're bringing in this mystery person from the trailer.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that's where we're going. Also, fun fact, Sly Moore is a party animal, and I am here for that fact. I love that. I want to see this dinner party play out a little bit. We're not gonna get to, I don't think, but I want to see it just for that.
Fair enough. A couple more Easter eggs here. There is Mandalorian armor in there as well. And also, Den of Geek is pointing out that there's a set of armor that looks a lot like the Dark Lord Starkiller armor worn by Galen Merrick in the alternate dark side ending of the video game The Force Unleashed. So that may be in there as well. And as far as Gorman is concerned, Gorman goes all the way back to the Legends continuity. It featured in the 1990s video games Star Wars X-Wing and Star Wars Rebellion. Gorman will unfortunately be the site of one of the biggest massacres in the Imperial era when stormtroopers open fire on peaceful protesters on the planet, mirroring what we see if you've ever seen the Gandhi movie based on that true massacre that happened in India. And Mon Mothma actually alludes to how the Empire is cutting off Gorman's shipping routes. So that may be what causes people to starve on the planet and sets up this protest that leads to them being killed by these stormtroopers from the Empire. So a lot of great deep cuts within this whole thing. And I think, Mike, you're absolutely right. He's like, just go to town, guys. And then moved on to the next thing.
But honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they even like, whoever they talk to, whoever their nerd people are, whether it's someone at Lucasfilm, whether it's someone that they've got working with them, but like if it's a wise writer who knows what he or she or they don't know.
Yeah, what their strengths are.
So you're writing the scene and like, look, you're focusing on the politics and you're sort of fleshing out this relationship and you're writing Mon Mothma in a way that we've never seen before. And we're really getting into the nitty gritty. And then you say, okay, well, like, I'm going to put that there was this thing here and, oh, she's referencing this or we need to reference some planets. And just be like, hey, who knows what the stuff that makes sense is? Like, somebody else do this, like, as opposed to like being really arrogant and being like, well, I'm going to put something in there or I'm going to make up something because I don't want to be a nerd and who cares about Easter eggs, like allowing somebody, whoever it is, to like really, and I don't know, maybe it's Dan Gilroy, maybe it's not, but like to really fill those Easter eggs in, it's what's really working because it is very, it makes the Star Wars fan side of me happy without feeling fan servicey. Yeah. And that's a good balance to be in.
And I'm sure Kathleen was the last person to write on the script and put in the whip and the stones from Indiana Jones. We've got Indiana Jones 5 coming.
Put in the Shankara stones.
Let's put a little a thing in there.
That was Harrison Ford.
You think so?
There's a place for the whip.
You get out of here. You died. Get out of here. All right. Well, there we go. That's our entire review. Let's get some final words. Mike, final thoughts on this episode here as we head into episode 5 of Andor.
Both sides of it, the Cassian story and the Mon Mothma story, got me really excited for what happens next. Cannot wait to see this whole thing go down on Aldani. I think that's going to be an awesome thing. I think we're going to lose some people. Yeah. I think Cassian is going to show what he's worth to the Alliance. And on the other side, just really seeing Mon Mothma continue to navigate what's going on in Coruscant and all of this intrigue. And then on the Empire side, like with Cyril and Deidre, like seeing where this goes, like I'm really engaged in all of these stories. Like I said, I do feel like the first three episodes almost feel like prologue at this point. Like I want to go back to Bix. I want to go back to everybody back there and see what's going on. And Marva, like everybody, I'm intrigued by those characters, but these newer stories, like seeing this rebellion really start on both ends and seeing how the Empire is trying to balance it out. Like, I'm really happy that we don't have just 6 episodes.
You make an excellent point, Mike, because I didn't even think about all those people back on Ferrix at all, and they made such an impression with me over the first 3 episodes, but I was so caught up in the new stuff we were getting here in this, so that speaks volumes to the wealth of what they're doing. Laura, final thoughts on this episode, what you claim is your favorite episode of the first 4, so what are your thoughts here, final thoughts as we head into episode 5?
Certainly my favorite so far. So, I mean, going off of like sort of the pacing that I was very frustrated with in the first 3 episodes, if we're going to continue at that pace, we're not going to get to this heist until like episode 10. And I really hope that that's not the case. I hope that we're getting into it at some point soon.
Oh my God.
I'm very curious to see, and I'm hoping we get to the point at some point, what the end goal of getting these crates of payroll is. Because like, first of all, crates, like it's like paper or something. Like we're not stealing like a data chip or something yet. Like they're like, we're doing like pay stubs, it sounds like, for the Empire in this era. That's unusual to me. It's surprising, but it's an interesting choice. So I'm hoping to find out what exactly they're planning to do with it, because I don't get it. Maybe they've sort of hinted at that, but I'm like, what could we possibly do with that? But yeah, I'm interested to see where it goes. I'm interested to see much more of Mon Mothma and see where her story potentially ultimately ties in with Cassian's, or do we have to wait until season 2 to sort of get that story? We've got plenty of time. We've got 24 episodes. Yeah. They may hold off on that.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's a good point. Are they stealing money or are they stealing the pay stubs? What are they stealing with the payroll?
Yeah, I understood it. I felt like they're stealing the money.
Yeah, and if it is the money, are they doing that to fund other operations? Remember Enfys Nest doing her own
Well, because like clearly Mon Mothma is having trouble moving her, because like Chandrila is like very like Coruscant. Like it's a core world. It's very rich. That's, you can tell by where she lives. So her being able to fund stuff is definitely a plus for the Alliance and for the Rebellion. But like, I think that getting this money maybe takes a little bit of the heat and pressure off of Mon Mothma to have to be doing what she's doing, is the way that I was reading it. But I could be wrong. We'll see.
And this may be a backup plan by Luthen, concerned about whether Mon Mothma is going to come through or not. And if she doesn't, he's got this as a backup plan. That's possible as well. Shannon, final thoughts on this episode 4 as we go into episode 5?
I mean, I love that we're only a third of the way through. Thus far, I'm all in on the show. Based off of the first 3 episodes, I'm wondering if that's sort of the kind of the format that it'll take, that we'll go in chunks of 3, that, you know, you've got this casting story that ends with the big shootout. Is this next batch going to end with that heist? And also, like, who, like, my guess is Deidre is the one who's going to bring Karn back into it.
Yeah.
But who Deidre is actually going to be going up against? Like, is it going to be Mon Mothma? Is it going to be Cassian? Is it going to be Luthen? Like, I'm so curious right now. Yeah. I mean, the show has my full attention. And I'm really excited to see what happens next week.
And there's also the partisan factor. I mean, Saw Gerrera is in here somewhere.
He's going to show up at some point.
And he's showing up at some point. And we've never seen... Because even when they went, even in Rogue One, Cassian and Saw don't have any scenes together.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. And it doesn't seem like Cassian really knows Saw. Like, it'll be interesting to see, like, Saw and Cassian don't really have a relationship. And Cassian doesn't have a relationship where he can just go to Saw. It's the whole reason that Jyn Erso exists. Like, that's why they have to go to Jyn Erso. So I don't think we're going to have a whole bunch of Diego Luna, Forrest Whitaker scenes. But where Saw plays into all of this with what's going on, both either with the Rebellion side or the Empire side, is also going to be really interesting. So yeah. I'm really enjoying the... You know, the Marvel shows particularly, like, if you are a longer show, you get 6 episodes. And if you're a shorter show, you get 9 episodes. And we've got 12 for Andor. So, like, it's I'm really feeling the luxury, the stretch room, the leg room of 12. It's nice. Yeah.
It'll be curious when we get to 18 from Daredevil how we feel about that as well. All right. Well, there you go. And I will say this. I'm loving it so far. This is my kind of Star Wars. Nothing about this episode turned me off or didn't make me want to see more and feel more. I love that we're expanding the character base or the character count in this. I love that there's all these different storylines happening, and I'm monitoring it all and excited to see where it's all going to go and where it's all going to end up. And I like every single actor who is playing these roles and what they're bringing to it as well. So looking forward to some really new approaches and nuances as the events start to unfurl here over the next 8 episodes that we have left in this season. All right, well, thanks so much for watching this spoiler review of episode 4 of Andor. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, I'd like to follow us on social media. On Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. And if you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSis.
Mikey?
If you enjoy looking at us talk about Star Wars and watching John forget to take commercial breaks, then we are here for you. And we will continue to do that throughout the rest of Andor's run. We will continue to remind John that we're supposed to take commercial breaks. In the meantime, here's what you can do for us. You can hit that like button below. You can subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page. Leave your comments below. What Easter eggs do we miss? How are you feeling about it so far? Too slow? Too much? Too little? Too much? Or whatever. Just let us know what you think. If you are listening to us on podcasts, leave us some stars and leave us some comments so we go up in the rankings. And as always, the best thing that you guys can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. And of course, thanks again to Laura Kelly for joining us for this review. She'll be joining us for the whole season. So thank you, Laura. Please let people know where they can find all your work and all your Star Wars knowledge on display.
Sure. I am often tweeting about Star Wars. You can find me on Twitter @ShutUp_Laura. You can find me and John talking about Star Wars right here on his channel on The Jedi Way. And you can find the audio only podcast I do with my friend Alice, where we drink wine and talk about Star Wars. That's called Force Toast, a Star Wars happy hour. And you can find it on Twitter @ForceToastPod.
There you go. All right. Thank you all so much. Take care of yourselves. Be well. And we will talk to you next time with another brand new spoiler review episode here from the
Geek
Buddies
and Laura Kelly.
Hey! Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.